win.
This is Dr. Vincent Medici, and I have always been a champion for Straight Talk on Health. My educations and experience are extensive and nothing short of impeccable. My ability to explore the dark closets of your healing are legion. And when you share that sacred space with me, you will know why I profess that it is God who does the healing. So together, we will remain humble and sustain that fight to the very last round. Even when we fear that God has betrayed us, only to find in that glorious end. Good morning. I hope everyone knows that was Rocky. That was Rocky 1, 1976, that movie came out. And that music is from round 14 on the original Rocky soundtrack. When Rocky, and I think the fight was on the 4th of July, was fighting Apollo Creed. Rocky was the total underdog. He was the bum in the film, as they termed him. A street guy going nowhere. And Apollo Creed gives him a shot at the title, because in America, you can be anybody. Come from anywhere, believe in any God, and become somebody. And that was the theme of the show. But to do that, you'd have to believe in yourself. Irregardless of religion, you'd have to find your faith. And that's what Rocky did in the film. Now, I saw Rocky in this dump of a movie theater in 1977 in Flushing, Queens, New York City. I can still remember the day. Just take a hint from the word flushing, you know? Everyone in New York is depressed. It's the winter. The theater is a dump. And then to this music in round 14, Rocky throws an uppercut to Apollo Creed's chin and knocks him to the canvas. Everybody in that theater, and I have never seen this in a movie since, everyone in that theater jumps up screaming. There were women screaming, women fainting. I'm 16 years old at the time. I'm screaming, jumping, I'm crying. Grown men are in tears. When I left that theater, I ran 9 miles. It was in January. The temperature must have been 10 degrees. I ran 9 miles straight home. And I ran home singing Rocky. My arms were up. My hands were out. I must have looked like a nut. And only people that had seen that film might have known what just happened. That film has captivated people since 1976 when it came out. Today, people from other countries see that film and the same thing happens. Thousands of people do the same thing when they watch that movie. Rocky's universal. And I bring it up because it's years later now and it's the same thing. I'm a doctor. My patients are sick. They lack faith. Often they think it's not going to happen for them. God's betrayed them. That's the way they think. And they got to reach down deep. They got to find their faith, and it's Rocky 1 all over again. Now, there's something called natural law. I want to see if we can get you to understand this word, natural law. And if you follow natural law, your body will do wondrous things. The job of the doctor is to teach the patient the natural laws that you'll observe during a healing. People don't understand these things. In the healing, on the other side of a suffering, you're going to find out who you are, why you're here, and what you're meant to do. That's the Rocky story, and that's the story of us all. That's the story of a healing. But who looks at chronic illness that way? It's not the way people see it. We all want what we want, when we want it, and we want it now. Healing is a detour. Healing's not part of a spiritual unfolding. That pesky symptom that's destroyed our life, that's prevented us from doing the things we want to do, darn it, damn it, why did it happen to me? You don't heal that way. We all want the magic cure, the quick and easy cure, and if we don't get it, and it's 5 years, 10 years, well, then I guess it's okay that your dreams just don't come true. Lots of people live that way. I treat people all week like that. Okay? Healing an illness is just like Rocky. And you're going to wish you were never born sometimes. You're sitting there today listening to me on this show. I know some of you have thought that way. You're going to feel like no one understands your pain. You're going to feel absolutely alone. No wife, no children, no girlfriend, no priest, no rabbi, no minister. Just you and your unremitting pain. And that is exactly when you can change your life. That's where it occurs. It's that still point, that critical moment. I wait for that in my patients. I watch them decide whether to do the Rocky thing or die. And that's exactly the moment when you develop faith. Because in that moment, you have to develop faith. And the point is, it's normal to feel all those feelings. If you feel that way, that's normal. That's okay. That doesn't mean you're not going to heal. What you have to do when you're scared, like Rocky had to do when he was scared, is relax behind your fear and your pain and then convert it to rocket fuel. And that's the story of success. Everybody has those feelings. Everybody. Do not kid yourself. You are not alone in that way. So it's to be or not to be. This show is about sleep, to sleep or not to sleep. That's the other question. Are you sleeping? So let's get to it. The rules of engagement for a good night's sleep. Number one, burn this into your memory. Sacrifice everything. Eat bad. Eat junk food. Dislike your job and your boss. Live in emotional or physical pain. Don't exercise. Drink a little too much. Do whatever you want to do. Just never sacrifice your sleep. I'm dead serious. Look, we all have crazy lives, and we all sacrifice. We don't eat right. We don't exercise. We don't do a lot of things we know we're supposed to do, and we're constantly treading water, trying to get to that place where we know we're doing what we're supposed to do, but we don't. So you got to make sacrifices. That's what it is. A mom with five kids, a husband working two jobs. Do one thing, or I should say don't do one thing. Don't sacrifice your sleep. If there's one thing in 20 years of hardball medicine, I will tell you, it's don't sacrifice your sleep. If you were to ask me one factor, one variable most associated with the onset of illness, I would say unequivocally, unanimously, without competition, that one variable is poor sleep. Arrange your life around the sleep. Don't be getting up at 5 or 4:30 so you can get to the gym every day. And then you get up tired, and then you just push hard through that morning, and you spend your day semi-exhausted, but you sit back satisfied because you did those sit-ups in the morning. Do not do that if it means you're sacrificing your sleep. So how do I sum up the essence of why I say what I just said? Well, there's a gland in your brain on top of your pituitary called the hypothalamus gland. Sits just on top of the pituitary. It scans every cell of your body at the speed of light, at perhaps faster than the speed of light, identifying every malfunction in your infinitely vast collection of cells and initiating the beginning of cure. Electrochemically, it orders the beginning of cure. It runs the show. It is the crown chakra. It is the master. It is the orchestrator. It is the real focus of anyone on the cusp of understanding what the body and healing is about. And sleep is when you recharge the hypothalamus. So the hypothalamus can recharge you. You don't sleep, the hypothalamus goes into some form of a coma. It's not quick. It doesn't see. So sleep is when you recharge that so it can eyeball even the smallest shift in physiology, and then it sends out in ways we barely understand. Barely do we understand this, but we know it's true. It sends out electrochemical impulses to recharge, okay, redirect your other systems to cure. This is why head traumas are so bad. I don't want to get into that today. I'll get that into that another day. But these head traumas, where the occiput and the first and second cervical vertebra, they disorient spatially. It can actually torque the brainstem in subclinical ways, meaning you don't see it. or it's not something that you know happened to you, but nonetheless, your hypothalamus, because of the head trauma, falls asleep. We understand this to the point where the Germans developed machines to charge up the hypothalamus. I bought a machine years ago. I still use it today. It's called the Acuscope. The Acuscope sends an electrochemical pulse. It sends a microamperage into the hypothalamus at just the frequency that the hypothalamus operates on to recharge it when it's dipped because you haven't slept, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Now, if you've tried all the supplements on the market, so we're going to switch to my third little tidbit here. Supplements and sleep. You're trying to get sleep. You've spent 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. You've spent every single dollar on finding that supplement to get you to sleep, and you're still not sleeping. You still think you're going to find that supplement. I get this all the time. If I could only find that supplement to cure my sleep problem. Doctor, do you have anything? I mean, this is not the way you ought to be thinking. Yeah, if you've got a sleep issue, you try the supplements. You try the melatonin. You try the tranquility complex, so on and so forth. You search. But after 6 months, after you've tried everything, guess what? The problems with you and sleep are way more fundamental to the supplement. Lots of people. I don't really know the statistic, but I will tell you, it's at least one out of two people that I've seen over 20 years with chronic insomnia do not solve their problem with an herbal remedy. But with the right perspective, you can intelligently use herbs to bring your body back into balance so that the sleep will be restored. I've counseled dozens of people back to healthy sleep patterns, not with specialized herbal remedies, but simply by using herbal remedies to bring organ systems back into optimal function. It's a big difference between those two perspectives. So looking for that single herb at a certain point is not what you want to do. And a lot of you, you have to stop creating anxiety because you have not found that herbal remedy. And you're innocent enough, and it is innocence, to believe that you just have to keep looking for that single cure. You think it's about faith. In this case, it's not about faith. It's about lack of knowledge. You see? It gets to the point where you're not sleeping because you're out all night searching for remedies to help you sleep. Now, what about a more fundamental approach like biliary patency? Did you notice I didn't say the coffee enema? I didn't say gallbladder flush. I didn't say liver gallbladder nano detox. And I hope you know why I didn't say that. Because you've listened to enough shows by now. You've gone to the website, straighttalk.cc. You've archived up the shows. I kind of know who you are. And you know that there's a line across which you'll see a dramatic shift in your body. And that line, when you do the coffee enema and the gallbladder flush, is when the bile gushes out of your body. If you're doing these things and you don't see yellow-green fluid shoot out of your body as you do the enema, as you drink the olive oil and the next day you look into the toilet, if you're not seeing lots of yellow-green liquid, you're not there yet. And if you don't get to critical mass, you're not going to feel the effect, not the dramatic effect. But what does that have to do with sleep? I could do a whole show on what I'm going to tell you about biliary patency. That's why I did a whole show months ago. If you knew, biliary patency, meaning the bile flows freely, is one requirement for a good, long, deep sleep. When the liver is burdened by digestion, repressed anger, volatile anger, chemical toxicity, the liver does 1,200 things. When the body's going into mega acidosis, a super low pH like 5.8 to 6, coma time, the gallbladder is used by the liver as a passage to remove all the inflammatory, heat-producing variables from the blood, and then it flushes it out of your body. So the liver sees the heat in the blood. It comes to the liver, you flush to the gallbladder, and out of your body. But when the gallbladder is too plugged, the liver overheats. That's common sense. That's easy to understand. When the gallbladder is too plugged, the liver overheats, and that heat rises to the head and disturbs the brain. Another way to say it is a balanced liver is a cool liver, and a cool liver keeps the head cool. You know, the guy with the healthy liver is the guy that can handle stress and not flip out. You have to have power in that organ, meaning that organ allows you to say, darn it, I'm not going to let it get down this way. I'm going to do something about it. I'm not going to stay sick. I'm going to do something about it. See, that's a healthy, powerful liver. But if it overheats, the heat rises to your head and you lose judgment. So you get pissed off inappropriately to the point where you're sending so much heat up to your head that you lose your sleep at night. Now, if you're ready for the Master Flush, and I suggest you get Moritz's book, The Great Gallbladder Flush. I mentioned that in show number one. You do, if you're ready for it. Every 4 to 5 weeks, you do the Master Flush. And you do that 12 to 16 months. No one does that. Anyone that I've ever seen do it will write their own book, because that's how drastic the shift will become. 1 year of hard work, which isn't hard work at all. That hard work stuff's in your mind anyway. Just get started to get one working component of what it takes to get a good night's sleep. Now, what I see instead is people searching 5 years for the single remedy that you may never find, and then getting increasingly worried because your search hasn't paid off. You see the difference in perspectives? Here's another thing that slips by all the time. Anemia and blood deficiency. Those are two different things. Iron deficiency anemia and blood deficiency. But they amount in very similar ways to the same thing. You think of it in the sense of if the blood is light in nutrient. If we take out your blood and we look at it and we say, man, that blood doesn't have power. It doesn't have energy. It doesn't have oxygen. It doesn't have hemoglobin because it doesn't have iron. It doesn't have the other minerals, etc., etc. When your blood is light in nutrient, iron, other minerals, the tongue, so stick out your tongue in off light in front of a mirror, not direct sunlight and not in artificial garbage light, but in off light. Stick out your tongue. And it may be pale, and its tip may be dimpled or indented. Just get a Google search and look up heart blood deficiency and tongue. You'll see lots of pictures. When that tongue is you, and often who is that? That's the underweight Vata, meaning the model type, meaning no meat on the bone, meaning cachexia or starvation look from vegan, vegetarian lifestyles. When you're like that, when your blood is deficient, the brain will fail to calm itself to sustain a long, deep, vitalizing sleep. Deficiency makes air and wind, and that goes up to your head, and it traumatizes your sleep pattern. If you come into my office and you're like this, I put 20 pounds of meat on you, of muscle, of fat. I get you digesting, and I feed you a certain way. And you fatten up, and over 6 months, your sleep changes drastically. Little fat is what we call ground. It takes the airy vata type, and it brings them back to the earth so they can ground at night, so they can mesh into the ground. They can just dissolve into the dark, fertile earth under the black, starry sky. That's what sleep is. These types are floating up in the air all day, and then they're still floating up in the air at night. Not because they're making heat, but because they're so light they fly like balloons. Now, if you're listening, don't fatten up on carbs. That's the problem. You have to fatten up on fat. And if you have a problem with fat, please reconsider. Lots of people, even though they're at 8% body fat, won't double it to 16%. I don't know what that is. All right? We ought to be mature enough as a culture to understand a little fat's okay. If you're going to do it, don't do it on carbs. Don't do it on complex carbs. Any carbs. If you're like that, the carbs will not sedate you in the long term. You think they do, but they don't. In the long term, they stimulate. So if that's you, do not fatten up on carbs. Now, anemia. Anemia slips through all the time. So I want to take a moment to discuss the chronic meaning of long-term anemia. Because you're not going to sleep if you've got it. It's another variable. And again, it's not an it, right? So nobody's saying it's about pH and it's about anemia and it's about this and that. No, you have to look at yourself like a profile. First, you got to get through the idea that half the time there's no herb for you. Then you have to start bringing systems into alignment. So you've got to make your own portfolio. And if you try one solution like biliary patency, don't be foolish and say, oh, well, that didn't work. That is not the way you think. The way you think is that's one good thing you did and you put it into your health basket. And then you do more, and then you do more. And after a year, you've brought six or seven big things into alignment, and that, my friends, is where you get the shift in your life. Okay? You're getting the real stuff here on the show. This is how it really works. If you've listened to the show for 12 weeks, and I know many of you have, okay, we're getting you off all these myths of this quick fix way to health. Which should never, and I want to emphasize this also, substitute for that attempt. Lots of people with lots of symptoms, sleep included, can get a quick fix. It's worth investigating the quick and easy solution first. So, the rules for engagement when you're dealing with something that's chronic, look for the quick, easy solution first. But if you don't get it after 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, stop that perspective. Get rid of it and understand you have to use this one. Okay? Now, hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is what you call a porphyrin ring. Okay? And it combines four compounds called pyrroles. And it puts iron in the center of this porphyrin ring. And then the iron attaches to oxygen in the lungs. And then this morphing amoeba-like chemical monster goes into your bloodstream, and when it gets near your cells, it dumps the oxygen off. And your cells will drink it as long as the calcium is there to allow the oxygen to come in. Okay? Now, if you've got no iron, then you've got no oxygen. If you've got no oxygen, your cell has to make energy, or ATP, adenosine triphosphate, the moolah, the currency of the cell. The compound the cell has to make everything the cell does, from repair itself to do its job. If you've got no oxygen, then your cell must make this ATP without oxygen. And so the cells shift into an oxygen deficient, or what we call an anaerobic, a without oxygen lifestyle. Meaning now you're telling the cell to get the job done without oxygen. That's like telling the factory workers at the auto plant, look, we're going to cut your salaries by 50%. Just keep making those cars perfect. It doesn't work that way. And it doesn't work to tell your cells, and thus your organs, to work in an oxygen-deprived state. Yet people do this all the time. If I'm not talking to 500 people right now, all right, that are suffering from chronic anemia, not the kind that sends you to the hospital, but just that low-grade anemia. You're under a point or so, and you've been that way for years. Oh, yeah, I've been anemic for years. Yeah. You are hurting yourself, man. Okay? I see people do this all the time. Danger. You can't live in long-term iron deficiency anemia and not expect to pay the price. And it's ridiculous to speculate on what price it may pay to your health. You don't know, but don't be surprised in that state of anaerobic shock that you're going to be ready to sleep at night when you're bearing all those stresses all day. It's too grave an insult to the fundamental systems. It's something you must bring into alignment. Now, lots of cultures, like the American Indian, like the East Indian, I'm referring to Vedic medicine, will tell you to go out into the wilderness. This next segment you're going to find crazy, but I'm dead serious. You go out into the wilderness, find a place that pulls you to the ground. Go into a natural-made hut, or its equivalent, and sleep with your head to the east. And if that doesn't work, to the south, but never to the north. Nature at night is dark. It's black dark. It's scary dark. It compels you to drop down into a sleep at about 8 p.m., 9 p.m., till 3 or 4 or 5 a.m. And there's a reason for that. Your body is made to sleep during those hours. Those are farmers' hours. Those are the nomads' hours. Not what we've done. Not this 1 a.m. to 6 a.m., 1 a.m. to 7 a.m. routine. It's not what the body's designed to do. And, you know, you learn this. I don't learn most of these things out of books. I back them up with books. I don't believe anything until I test it with experience, and not just to myself. That's the beauty of this show, you see. When you supervise a healing, you'll eventually observe your patients naturally gravitate to those hours because that's the best rest they can get. When they've got their faith, when they've decided to heal, when they understand healing is like the stock market, it's an up and down process, it's an evolution. You watch them over a year gravitate to that kind of sleep. Only I want to see them sleep 12 hours, 14 hours, long, straight sleep. Now, that's how you heal, you see. 5 hours, you just stay alive. If you're healthy, if you're vibrant, if your systems are in balance, you can maintain it 5 hours. But don't delude yourself. I'm talking about the millions of chronically ill, and that means tons of people out there in the workforce, and I know you all, or many of you, who have to work, and their life is a daily calculation about the amount of energy you have to simply get the job done. The healthy people don't get that. They don't know what it is to sit down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and say, my God, how much energy do I have to get to 9 p.m.? And what can I do? Because I know I won't be able to stand up in about 5 hours. That's the way, guys, a lot of people live, and they're out there in the workforce. So for you, if you're listening, if this fits you, the more sleep, the better. And another issue, the exact amount you're going to figure out for yourself by listening to your body's wisdom, not as a published study. You listen to your body, and that's how you'll get your answer. And as you're rehabbing yourself, some of you may need 6 straight, 7, 8 straight. Some of you may need to take a 2-hour nap in the middle of the day. Everything varies. You and your relationship with sleep is up to you to explore, and you'll figure your way. And studies won't back you, but you'll know from your experience. All right. First of all, as in nature, make sure your room is black dark. That means no street lights coming in, no security lights coming in. I was at a place the other week at night outside the house. It's flashing on and off every 30 seconds because it's got one of those security lights, and the squirrel comes by or the raccoon, and the light flashes on and the light comes right through. This is the kind of thing you get in hotels. No light on the inside of the bedroom, meaning like alarm clocks, some stupid light on the computer, the light that guides you at night, the night light. Replace the night light with a small flashlight that you keep in a place you can trust right by your bed. So if you have to get up and urinate, you just turn that light on. You don't keep the night light on in the bathroom with the door open. Okay? Noise. Get earplugs. Get the feminine earplugs if your ear canals are really small. Lots of people say, oh, I can't do earplugs because they hurt my ears. They've got these pretty in pink feminine earplugs. If your ear canals are small, especially the ladies, find these things, use them, work it. If you don't like earplugs. Earplugs can save you, okay? Or save your money and soundproof your room. That's right. If you really got a problem, soundproof the room. It's too expensive, I know. No, it's not. You will find the money. It's worth it if it's sacrificing your sleep and you can't move and your neighbor's not going to move. I had a guy in my office the other week. He's got 7 people. He lived in peace up in the Sacramento area for 40 years. And the parents, who were his friends, gave it to the son. And the son is a semi-heroin addict. And the son has lots of people coming in. This guy is buying a gun. He's disgusted. He's spoken. He's at his wit's end. And he's a health fanatic. And he values his sleep. I told him, I said, soundproof your room. That's your way out. The rock and roll guys do it all the time. Rock and rollers know this. They go into the neighborhoods, they make a ton of noise, someone calls the police, and within 1 year, those rock and roll guys soundproof the room. So if you've got the money, if it's anywhere near feasible, and outside noise is killing your sleep, soundproof your room. Now me, never once. I'm proud of this. Have I lived in my life, okay, with a noise problem? And I've personally lived in dozens of apartments in my teens and 20s. Many guest houses in my 30s, rooms for rent in big homes. Just my education's forced me to live like a nomad for years. And I have never lived with noise in any dwelling because if it's noisy, I don't move in. You see, when you rent, rent on the top floor. Know who your neighbors are before you sign the lease. Go meet them. Sit down with your landlord after he's decided he likes you and he's going to rent it to you. And just before you sign the lease and put the cash or the check or whatever in his hand, tell him that if the place is not quiet, there's just one thing about you. You're going to not be happy and you're going to be moving. And if there's anything he needs to tell you or somebody needs to tell you about noise, they better tell you now. See? If you say that too early, right, you don't get the place. But if you sit down after the guy's ran your credit and he's spoken to you and he's spent all his time and he's all happy because he's going to get his check and he doesn't like renting, but you look like a nice person, that's when you can really leverage him. And you can find out in that moment just what the reality is before you rent the apartment or the guest house or even buy the home. Go to the apartment in the morning and in the evening before you rent it. Don't show up the way brokers, and brokers do this purposely. Do not show up in the afternoon when the whole world's at work. Even the babies are taking the nap. The broker knows what the broker's doing because that's when you'll rent it in the nice, quiet neighborhood. That's not even when the dog is barking. So go to the apartment in the morning and in the evening. Go to it late on a Sunday afternoon. Go to it on a holiday weekend. If you can, talk to the last occupant. That's another one. Then you really find out the dirt. You find out who your landlord is, the noise, the neighbor's habits, the whole thing. There's lots of ways. I could do a whole show on how to find a healthy dwelling. Today, for me, I live at a vortex in the woods with many square miles. And within many square miles, there may be only 30 people. I don't even know my neighbors. Because they're too far away, and we just don't meet. They don't want to meet me. I don't want to meet them. It's not a personal thing. We just don't want to live in the city. Last year, I sent 4 patients out of the United States to heal for only $10,000 per year. Because there's still, unlike, of course, Europe, there's still lots of places in the world that are very, very safe, that are very, very clean. Clean beyond anything, I'm sad to say, in America. Where you can heal cheap, living back in nature. And when you're sick, chronically ill, and you can't sleep, and you can't move the ball because of what we've created here, you start thinking about that. One of these people I sent wasn't even sick. He just worked for years, and he wanted to retire, and he wanted to check something else out and really regenerate. So he's out there like Jack LaLanne for another 30 or 40 years. So get rid of the light. Get rid of the noise. Most of all, get rid of the EMF, the radiation. Not just the EMFs that I talked about before, that you can get the 4180 Gauss meter from F.W. Bell, right? Go to the website, archive the show. It's a 4180 Gauss meter from F.W. Bell. It's under $300. Use that so you don't go into, I have so many people like this as I think about it. They can't sleep. They haven't slept in a year or two. Oh, well, tell me, how long have you lived in the place you're living? You know what? I've just lived there about as much time as I haven't been able to sleep. You give them the Gauss meter, and boom, there's the problem. Happens all the time. Buy one, okay? When you move, if that's what you have to do, okay, buy a new house, apartment, measure the Gauss in the house, okay? What about the computer or the cell phone to the ear? You can't measure this. And you can't get rid of the computer. The cell phone is something you can do something about, right? You've got the hands-free things. You got the speakerphone on the cell phone. You've got options. But the computer, your job, your profession, like mine does increasingly, I'm in front of a computer, my hands on this nasty field. Okay? If you can't avoid the EMF, use the med body packs and the magma packs. Make sure you're taking a couple of teaspoons a day. That's a big dose, isn't it, of DHLA. And DHLA is expensive. That's NeuroND now. That's expensive. Do it. That's way up on the list. That's a staple. That's what you do for life. No one in the world should not be doing DHLA regularly unless they live in total isolation. But for you, for me, for others, that and the med body packs and magma packs. If you're exposed to EMFs, and you can't avoid it, use the clays routinely on your hands and feet and neck. If it's on the neck, it cools the head. If it's on the hands and feet, it cools the entire body. I do weird things. I use clay all over my body in the winter, in the cold rain. And I sit in rosemary, fresh, wild rosemary, in a rain. And I let the rain pelt on my body. And then I jump into a boiling hot shower. Okay? I work in labs with much radiation. And that's what I have to do. Unlike my colleagues who are sick, because they don't. If you have to travel a lot, if you work with electrical equipment, if you work at a nuclear reactor site, you fit the bill. And if your sleep patterns are off, okay, you got to start thinking this way. If you've got land, if you have a house, if you've got a nice house with property, and by the way, when you're going to buy the small house with the big land, not the big house with the small land. You see, I don't get the Beverly Hills scene, do you? Property, man. Get out into the land, get out into the sun, find a comfortable part in the grass, and regularly apply the clay to your hands, feet, and neck. Let it dry in the sun, and then go into the house or the shower outdoors or whatever and get that clay off your body, stretch, massage yourself, and get the radiation out. Remember, the clay puts the Schumann waves in, it puts the natural energy waves of the earth in, and it sucks out the radiation, and it's inexpensive. Now, what does radiation have to do with sleep? You got to remember, right? Your body's an electrical field. It's its own electrical field. And when you cross it with a man-made field, it depletes or distorts your own electrical field. One of the first places you see people suffer is disturbed sleep. Disturbed sleep patterns. Worse yet, if your profession requires that you have to travel regularly, use 2 to 3 teaspoons of DHLA, green tea, and reduced CoQ10 before, during, and after the flight. That means put the liquids in those 2-ounce bottles, get it onto the plane, buy the filtered water once you're inside the airport, mix it up, and you start sipping away the whole flight, after the flight, and into the evening. Okay, be no stranger to the use of the antioxidants to knock back the EMFs, especially if you're a guy that's on jets all the time, and many of us are. If I had to travel a lot, and I've turned down tons of opportunity, so I don't travel a lot, I'd make sure I had an additional house built without a concrete foundation, but one of wood or stone, something where I could really pull the natural waves in. As it is, a lot of times I've gotten these natural fiber tents. I've used them in my last 2 dwellings, and I'll sleep in the tent. Both were on sites where I could catch much Schumann wave. I selected the sites for that reason, and they guarantee me very deep sleep. I am very protective about my sleep. And you guys already know this from camping. People get the best sleep when they camp out, or they sleep in wood or bamboo. And they know what good sleep is. You guys know this. And you also know you get your worst sleep on business trips in EMF-charged hotels, which is what we call Faraday cages. So the point really is, how much nature can you bring back into your home? I've got a patient right now. He's living in a 7-story condominium. In other words, 7 stories up. And for different reasons, he's lost his sleep pattern. And he suffered from severe insomnia. This is a guy that used to sleep 8-10 hours straight, and he loved his sleep. And things happened, and for 1 year he's had severe insomnia. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to evolve this with this patient. Very possibly he's going to spend the next 6 months in Fiji. or on very large acreage living in a hut on the beach. We may try islands off the coast of Brazil. There's ways to do this, even if you can't leave the country. There's places in America that can sedate. And if you're like this, and I meet a lot of people who are like this, and you've got the time to do this, okay? You've got Sandpoint in Idaho, Clark Fork in Idaho, the same. You can camp safely. You can live in wood cabins in protected wilderness for months on end. You see? People think this isn't practical, you see? But for the money, for less money, for more money, rather, they live in EMF-riddled, noisy, toxic apartments, living off savings, second loans, borrowed monies, inheritances, severance pays. And they spend way more money living in some apartment somewhere in the inner city and with way less return. You can sit home and try to heal from your apartment in Torrance, no, not knocking Torrance, just next to the oil refinery. The air is dirty. Or you can spend less money living in a room in the mountains of Santa Barbara, Big Bear, or Idaho. The point is you can't reset your nervous system. You can't move out of sympathetic dominance, meaning a stress-dominated existence, unless you take your entire existence into an area where the earth can engulf you back to autonomic balance, and that's where you'll find your sleep. Okay, you need a potty break. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back after that, okay?
See how I'll leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark.
In case you didn't know, that was Adele. I just had to play that today because I love that song, but also because, you know, recently Adele had to cancel her concert tour because of really bad laryngitis. So I'm going to put it out there. If anybody out there knows her phone number, would you tell her to please call 888-777-0711. 888-777-0711. I am dead serious about this. You know, a woman like this, we want to keep her singing till she's 120, and she's pooping out on us at 23 years old because of laryngitis. I feel I'm the guy for the job, so please put the word out. That's the toll-free number, 888-777-0711, not just for Adele, but for anybody with health concerns that wants their questions answered. And as always, if you call and we don't do it live, I'll always spend at least an hour after the show, which is why I'm late for work every Saturday, answering more questions so I can talk to everyone. And if I still can't get to everyone, which has been happening, you just give us your phone number and your name. You call in next Saturday. By then, we'll know who you are. You're at the top of the list, and I'll definitely speak to you on or off the air. So, across two Saturdays, you can't miss. All right. Next topic. This show is in its 11th week. The response has been fantastic. And I've talked to so many of you who, as far as I'm concerned, need more than 15 minutes on the radio show. More than the radio show can offer. I think you need something very often more comprehensive. So if this sounds like you, if you sense that 15 minutes, even 15 minutes, is not enough, and it's a lot of you, then get on my website, straighttalk.cc, that's straighttalk.cc, and sign up online for a nutritional phone consult on the old-fashioned telephone, or Skype video. I can get a lot done in 1 hour, and I can't imagine anyone needing more than 90 minutes. You save yourself the time and cost of transportation. It's definitely cheaper than an office visit. And if you're listening out of state, as many of you are, it's just the perfect solution. Okay, that's it. A little more Adele, and then back to the show. Okay, we're back. Now, stress. Stress means the secretion of higher amounts of cortisol. So if you're stressed, that means that you're going to see sleep disturbances very often. And under great stress, what's going to happen is that your adrenal cortex, that's the outer layer of your adrenal gland, the adrenal cortex is going to produce a lot, more than it should, more than you want it to, of this anti-inflammatory, anti-stress hormone called cortisol. So if you're under stress and you can mobilize a heavy cortisol response, in other words, if you're not sick but you're strong, say, or you've got strong adrenal glands and you're under stress, you get the job done. What starts to happen is that your adrenal gland, because you're under such a burden, starts to produce large amounts of cortisol. That's good in a sense, but what happens is by the evening when the cortisol levels should be low, as you drift off into the evening sleep phase, this person, his cortisol levels are so high that they can't start to unwind. They can't go to sleep. So as they go later into the day, into the evening, they start waking up more than ever. And this is the person then that sits down at 10, 11 p.m., 12 o'clock. They're so wired from the day because they're strong enough to produce this response. They've got all this cortisol circulating. They haven't toned down, and they're up for hours because they can't sleep. This is the kind of person, if this is you, all right, that has to exercise to burn off the hormone. Or you've got to remove the stressors in the first place, which usually isn't feasible. Some people are wired genetically. Some people are wired so that they're so strong. They're so athlete strong that they produce tons of hormone. And under stress, under corporate stress, the stress of life, and that ability to produce all that hormone, if you don't exercise, you can't unwind. Now, that's not the way for everybody. But there's a lot of people who simply cannot sleep because they're so wired because they didn't exercise. This is built into the genes. You don't sleep because you're not moving your body. So in a sense, your cortisol production exceeds your lifestyle. Think of you as a nomad. You're Scandinavian and you're the descendant of a Viking. You're Eastern European and you have Mongolian blood in you. You've got Mongolian blood in you. African American, American Indian, South American. We have so many cultures. The Welsh, the Scottish. We have so many nomadic type cultures that have evolved over thousands and thousands of years, moving their bodies to bring their body into what? Autonomic balance. And then all of a sudden, we're selling stocks and bonds or insurance behind a little desk in a little office under fluorescent light all day, and we stop sleeping. You measure the cortisol levels of these people, and they're through the roof. So some of you, and I think you'll know who you are, have to engage in exercise. 2 hours sometimes, at least an hour, running, jogging, hiking, surfing, sailing, basketball, to effectively utilize the large dose of cortisol that you're genetically engineered to secrete. Fluorescent lights, constant exposure to fluorescent lights, don't do them. Turn them off. If you work under fluorescent lights all day and you have the power, don't work under them. Fluorescent lights distort the natural circadian rhythms that tell your body when to be tired. There's a rhythm that relates to sunlight and darkness that produces the natural rhythm, the natural sequencing of how you should feel when you should feel it. It's seasonal. It's day to day. It's on some type of constant cycle, and fluorescent lights will destroy that. Turn them off. Use the natural sunlight in the room. Have a window built into the room. If you can't do that, bring in lamps or install lights that simulate natural sunlight. There's a way. If you're trapped in a corporate routine where you have no control over the lighting, just make sure then you spend your entire lunch outdoors without your sunglasses. If you have contact lenses, take them out and wear glasses. Those lenses block the UV into the pupil. And you can't set your sleep rhythms. You're going to have the sunlight absorbing through the pupil of your eye, minus the contact lenses if you wear them. Vital for your body's ability. You can do a whole show on circadian rhythms. We defeat them all the time. So people look for the magic herb to cure their insomnia. They live in gross sympathetic dominance under fluorescent lights, wearing contact lenses with minimal or no exposure to the morning sun. Then they bake themselves in radiation as they try to sleep, cut off from the Earth's natural rays as they find themselves encased in concrete and steel. They're eating late at night undigestible foods, plugging up their gallbladders, going acidotic, listening to the noise next door or their partner snoring, and then for the encore, getting up once or twice a night to pee. People live like this, and then they eat whole foods, whole organic foods, and feel protected because they went organic. We got a cue in here. We're not thinking clearly. If your partner snores, get the foam earplugs. If you don't like foam earplugs, learn to like them. I mean it. Push yourself to make relationship if you're up half the week because your partner snores. If they hurt your little ear canal, like I said before, get the feminine ones. Or you know what? Sleep in the other room before you get sick. Or have your partner lose 50 to 100 pounds and he won't snore or she won't snore anymore. That's right. Don't eat late at night and you won't snore anymore. Digest your food at dinner and you won't snore anymore. Learn where the scalene muscles are on the neck and lengthen them by correct stretching. Stretch the deep muscles of the neck and so the oropharynx will widen. And you won't snore anymore. This thing with the CPAP, what is that? How does that fit in to anything remotely connected to God or common sense? We wear a mask at night. We look like Darth Vader as we sleep. And we call that technology? An intelligent choice? There's no better solution than that, except the new one now, which is a surgery? Urination. I hope I have time for urination. Let's try the easiest solution first. If you're getting up at night to pee and you're awake all the time because you're up peeing, or you're under the delusion that just because you go back to sleep after you wake up and stand up twice, you're okay. You're not. And you guys know that already. Easiest solution first, right? What's the law? Every symptom may have an easy solution. So try multi-pollen. Only make sure you dose it strong, 4-3 times a day. Don't do a capsule or true of multi-pollen and say you tried it. That's too underdosed, okay? Remember, once it works, you cut back. So start big. Get the bottom line. Flower pollen will tone the bladder wall, allowing more urine to fill the bladder before it initiates the urine reflex. Another quick and easy is cut out evening liquids as far back as you can, so you can determine if that's a potential problem. Lots of people, they sleep, they drink till 8 p.m., they always get up once a night. I say cut back to 6, they come back a month later, they don't get up anymore. They have a straight sleep. My God, what are we doing? If we miss something like that, the repercussions of that are enormous. And look at the simplicity of the cure. Now, if you're up a couple of times a night for the last 20 years, and just because you go back to sleep, I've got to mention this. I know some of you know this, but if you're up twice a night for many years, and just because you go back to bed, you think you're fine, you're not. Uninterrupted sleep is what you want. When you get interrupted in your sleep, you can't make your hormone. Okay? Guarantee you, you are in adrenal overload if you're like that. You just have strong glands. So you get through, you compensate. But as you hit 50 and 60, you will hit the wall. Let's see what we're going to do now. I've got so much more to discuss here. Let's see. I think we're going to take all the callers after the show. No problem. And I want to see if I can get this segment in about lower abdominal muscles in women after childbirth, especially if you've had cesareans or episiotomies. These surgeries are catastrophes for the bladder. I'm going to bring a woman on pretty soon named Ellen Heed. She's given her life to rehabbing women after they've had difficult births where they tear and they create these scars. Her work is phenomenal. That's ellenheed.com. This is one of the things I'm going to be doing in the future, bringing on other practitioners to give other perspectives on health, but people that I respect. They've got to pass my gold standards so you know they're the real thing. And Ellen's one of them. That's Ellen Heed, HEED.com. Because if you've got a cesarean or an episiotomy, you've lost tone and your pelvic floor muscles cannot contract and you cannot hold your urine. And after childbirth, then, these muscles fibrose or scar and atrophy. So when the bladder initiates a reflex, the tone in the pelvic floor musculature, if it's strong, cuts off the reflex and you hold your urine. But if you have these scars, the scars prevent that contraction and you start peeing. So you look to the clays first. You look to the castor oils. After that, we've got to go more deeply. And that's what Ellen will teach us, I think, within the month. Okay, that's the show. It's 10:55. From now on, what we're going to do is we're going to start bringing on other practitioners. So within the month, I'm going to start to do that. I have 80 people signed up for the school, and I am still calling people. So if you haven't been called, just be patient. We're going to do a little philosophy all the time on this show. Because the hard copy, the facts, they interest you. You love to hear the facts. But I can tell you right now, next to the facts, okay, the philosophy behind healing is all the more important. You see, people don't heal usually because they just don't understand the perspective. They make lots of conclusions by themselves, not trusting anybody else, including their doctor. And that's why they fail. So the format of this show, as I see it evolving, and I love the way it's evolving, is to give you a little philosophy, a little music, a little Hollywood, a lot of facts, and I'm just going to take the calls after the show, okay? And you guys communicate with me. If it seems as it evolves that really you want to hear that question and answer on the radio, then we'll bring it back in. But I've got about 9 calls. I'll spend a good hour and a half, so don't think I won't be speaking to you. And you should call in anyway. And if somehow, unknown to me, this format of doing on the air is what you want, well, we'll think about 20 minutes of that then. But outside of that, I'm going to evolve it and do it this way. Okay, my friends, I'm going to go. You have a great 4th of July. You remember the intro on the show, and you have a knockout of a week.